The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Thanks for joining me here today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Dwight Falk, filling in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. He'll be back in probably tomorrow or shortly thereafter. But asked me if I'd take the show today, and I said yes, absolutely. Jumped at the chance to do it. Always love doing this program, and I'm glad you're listening in today. We've got quite a bit to talk about on today's program. Some headlines to look at here to start with. Always a lot happening, and in the second half of the program today, we're going to take a look at the topic of doing hard things. Sometimes there are things that we have to do that are hard, that are uncomfortable, that we would prefer not to do, and yet they're important and vital that we do them. And so we'll take a look at that in the second half of the program. But to start with today, we have a few headlines to look at, including something that was mentioned at the top of the hour on the news program, or on the news headlines, and that is the fires that are burning there in California. Quite a situation. It's not, surprising. They tend to have fires pretty often, recently especially. And this headline comes from NBC Los Angeles. It says Santa Ana winds push Getty Fire to west, threatening 10,000 structures. The Getty Fire began early Monday in the hills west of Los Angeles 405 freeway. And if you looked at some of the headlines over the last day or so, you probably saw the pictures of that, or if you didn't see those pictures, you've seen others, where people are driving down the freeway and this massive fire is on the hill. You can imagine how terrifying that would be. Los Angeles traffic can be scary enough, right, if you've driven through there. There's enough to pay attention to if you're driving through Los Angeles or somewhere in that area. But here, besides that, this massive fire raging on the freeway, I guess you would just, I don't know what you'd do. You'd stop, or you wouldn't want to drive through it. You'd have to be very careful there. So a lot of damage. It started at the 405 freeway, this particular fire, the Getty Fire, in the Sepulveda Pass. I probably said that wrong, but around 1:30 a.m., that was on Monday. And it was about 10,000 buildings, including commercial and residential structures, were threatened by the wind fan fire. Of course, they have that wind that comes through there, the Santa Ana winds, and it's just like a blowtorch. It says the most severe Santa Ana winds of the season are expected later this week. So perfect timing, right? As they would say, it's fire is breaking out, it's dry, and then you have the Santa Ana winds coming through. There have been a lot of fires out there in California. More than 4,870 wildfires have burned nearly 47,000 acres through mid-October in California. Last year, they had fires as well. More than 5,100 fires burned a historic 631,900 acres during that same period. California's five-year average through October 13th is 5,109 fires and 372,000 acres burned. That's a five-year average. California is a big state, so there's a lot of room out there, but that's a lot of fires that have burned. And so people are beginning to, they've been asking for years, I suppose, what the issue is. Fox News has a story about it today where it's talking about the power line structures, their infrastructure there in California, saying that that needs to be upgraded. Sometimes power lines spark these fires. There's other reasons as well. And then also, of course, people talk about the environmental change that they see happening, or they think is happening. They think it's, you know, the environment's changing in a way that's causing problems. And what is the issue here? Why do we keep having all of these problems in California, whether it's fires or other things? Well, there's a great radio program, a Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is from last year, August 8th, 2018. You can go back and find that. That's at the trumpet.com. And that's by your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. And the title is California Burning, Is Climate Change the Cause? You know, what is the cause of these fires? Is it climate change? Is it they need to update their power grid? You know, what's the cause of these problems? So that's a great program to go back and listen to California burning. Is climate change the cause? You can also go on thetrumpet.com and just search California. There's quite a few articles over the last decade plus talking about the different problems in California, and there's a lot of problems there. It could be wildfires. It could be the massive homeless problem in Los Angeles. Just economic problems. You know, once that was the most blessed state in the union, and you know, had a economy that was bigger than a lot of nations. Maybe still does. It's still prosperous in a lot of ways, but certainly not as blessed as it used to be. And so there are a lot of problems here in California. And there's a lot at thetrumpet.com that talks about some of the causes behind that. So that's a big story today. Lots of fires out there in California. And whenever those fires break out, the news headlines also always talk about the celebrities' homes that are being affected. So some of the celebrities, I guess, are on the run from these fires as well. So interesting out there in California. Here is an interesting story from the Daily Caller. This is pretty alarming, especially just considering the future of the United States. It says 1 in 3 millennials see communism as favorable, according to a new survey. So if you can believe that, of course, the millennials are younger people, and they think communism might not be a bad way to go. So obviously they haven't paid a lot of attention to history. Communism has been tried quite a few times, and the results have been a spectacular failure. They've been terrible. And yet, sometimes, apparently, some of these millennials think it might be a good idea. It says a survey conducted by the Victims of Communism and polled by the research and data from YouGov found that 70% of millennials are likely to vote socialist, and that 1 in 3 millennials perceive communism as favorable. The survey is part of the Victims of Communism's report, U.S. Attitudes Towards Socialism, Communism, and Collectivism, which polled 2,100 people in the United States who were 16 and older, with a margin of error of plus minus 2.4%. So all the details there about the poll. But it said a little over half the millennials polled said the Declaration of Independence guarantees freedom and equality better than the Communist Manifesto. I would agree with that. But the scary thing is a little under half, so just below 50%, don't think that it does. Again, just a lack of historical understanding there. Marion Smith, the executive director of the Victims of Communism Memorial Fund Foundation, said the historical amnesia, and that's a great way to say it, historical amnesia about the dangers of communism and socialism is on full display in this year's report. So there is historical amnesia here. You know, amnesia, can't remember, don't know what happened. And this is historical amnesia. These younger people either haven't learned about communism or they've forgotten about it. I tend to think they probably just haven't learned in the first place. But they think that communism is a good idea. And people have been victimized by that type of system for years. Many people, of course, I don't know, I suppose one of the more famous ones would be Russia. And if you've read any of the history of the Gulag camps that were set up and the way that people were victimized by that prison system, by their government, it's horrific. It really is a horrific time, and to the point where it's almost unbelievable, the horrors that people had to go through. And I've read a few books on that, and really good books, I think, and it's just amazing to follow the life of some people that were under that communist rule there under Stalin, where I remember many examples brought out in different historical books about people that were thrown into the gulag, of course, on nonsense charges. They didn't do anything, but somebody accused them, and the way they went into this gulag prison system, which was horrific and destroyed their lives. Then they were pulled out of the prison system because World War II was happening, and so they were thrown into military service for the Red Army, and they went through the battles of war. Some got captured and ended up in Nazi concentration camps, survived it, were freed, and then were sent back home to Russia and were put back into the gulag. I mean, that's, people have had that life. just unbelievable. You look at some of the most horrific systems and events of the 20th century, and some people hit almost every single one of those markers. Just really terrible situations that people went through. And that's some of the history there of communism. And of course, there's a lot to study into there, but as this individual says, there's historical amnesia about the dangers of communism. The fact that people would choose communism, it's unbelievable, especially when they've tasted some of the freedoms of democracy. They should do the poll, that same poll, with people that have lived under communism. Which one would you prefer? Now, if they did an honest poll, I'm sure they'd get much different results. Of course, in communist countries, you know, 98% always favor what the government said, because they're pretty fake polls. I don't even think they do polls, but elections tend to go that way. And so this is just a really shocking example of the lack of historical understanding that we have. This article continues. This is Marion Smith, executive director of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. And says, when we don't educate our youngest generations about the historical truth of 100 million victims murdered at the hands of communist regimes over the past century, we shouldn't be surprised at their willingness to embrace Marxist ideas. Really outstanding point there. If people don't know what happened under communism, it can be presented as a pretty good idea, I suppose. I mean, depending on how it's spun, it could sound okay. But as they say, when we don't educate our youngest generations about the historical truth of 100 million victims murdered at the hands of communist regimes over the past century, we shouldn't be surprised when they embrace these ideas. They went on to say, we need to redouble our efforts to educate America's youth about the history of communist regimes and the dangers of socialism today. There is still a lot of danger in that type of thinking, that type of ideology. And it comes up actually pretty often these days, it seems like, in the political talk here in the United States, where some of these newer candidates, I guess, or politicians, I think of Ocasio-Cortez and some of those, where they throw out these big ideas, and some people tend to think they're good ideas, but the math doesn't work if we're talking about economics. The math just doesn't work. You know, well, let's throw, I forget how much money they talked about throwing at some green initiatives. There's a green initiative, all right, that's going to be you're printing a lot of dollars, but there's no money for it. There's no money for these things. And so the idea that everyone's just going to have things taken care of and everyone will share everything equally, or, you know, some of the different thoughts there, just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You know, that the government can control everything. They will. They will control everything. And you can look at Stalin's Soviet Union to see what that was like. You can look at Hong Kong today, right? Is China... You know, well, they allow a protest to maybe a little bit, but eventually that gets squashed pretty vehemently. And so anyway, as I say here, we need to redouble our efforts to educate America's youth about the history of communist regimes and the dangers of socialism today. Millennials polled also said, and that you've probably heard this quote before, and this is just unbelievable. It says millennials polled also said they consider President Donald Trump the biggest threat to world peace. Really? The biggest threat. I mean, people may not like him or may not agree with some of his what he says and his bluster and so forth. But if somebody really thinks he's the biggest threat to world peace, I don't know. I don't know where that. Well, I do know where it comes from. The media really inspires that and trumpets that message out there. But again, the biggest threat to world peace. They say rating Trump as more dangerous to world peace than Russian President Vladimir Putin, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, or Chinese President Xi Jinping. Really? Okay. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And you've probably seen some of these videos before. Sometimes maybe a conservative group will make these videos where they'll go around and at a protest of some kind where people have these very strong ideas. They're against, you know, the current administration, or they're you know, against democracy or capitalism. And they'll ask them a few just basic questions, and they don't know really anything about what they're protesting, or they'll support an idea that's actually the exact opposite of what they're claiming to support, because they just don't know even really why they're out there in most cases. It's just the movement. It's what, you know, what their friends are doing or whatever the case may be. They want to be considered, open-minded and liberal and so forth. But they really don't even know what's going on. So you get a lot of this type of thinking where they'll say, oh, yeah, the President Trump is the biggest threat to world peace. I mean, he's not. He just clearly isn't. And so it's just amazing some of the thinking that's out there. 10%, this article says 10% of millennials said Trump is responsible. Now get this, and you've probably heard this before too, but it says 10% of millennials said Trump is responsible for more deaths and human rights abuses than mass murderers than Russian leader Joseph Stalin or notorious German dictator Adolf Hitler. Again, I mean, it's so ridiculous. The lie is so big there that it's almost hard to even logically talk about it because it's so crazy. You know, it's like if you're standing there and you're looking at a blue sky and you ask somebody next to you, well, you know, is that blue? And they say, no, it's green. Well, what do you have to go on? I mean, if they just don't believe you and they just think it's green, there's nothing to talk about. But to really have this thinking, 10%, I mean, that's a fair number of millennials said Trump is responsible for more deaths and human rights abuses than Joseph Stalin or Adolf Hitler. Just crazy. It's just crazy. And again, if you were to ask them and say, okay, well, give me your numbers, like show me where that happened, they'd have nothing. Of course, because it's ridiculous. But it gets back to the fact, and it's not to make fun of anybody or anything like that. It's just to get back to the point that when people don't study into history and really look at what has happened, they have nothing to go on. They have historical amnesia, as was mentioned in this article. And so if there's no basis for what's truth and what's error, well, then how do you convince anybody of anything? Right? There's no in-depth study into history here. And there's a really great write-up I wanted to talk about just a bit related to this, and it's written by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury. And the title is Why Educators Are Attracted to Communism. And this is from the January 2016 print edition of the Trumpet magazine, January 2016. So you could go back and read that at thetrumpet.com. And it's a short article. I wanted just to quote a little bit from it. But again, the title is Why Educators Are Attracted to Communism. Because these millennials are being educated. You know, they're not coming up with these ideas on their own. Somebody's educating them. And the education is telling them that, you know, communism is not a bad idea. So the article says, have you ever considered why educated people are so attracted to communism? In every place that system has been implemented, it has been a blatant, horrifying failure. Now, that statement is based on history. You can go back and prove that. It's been a failure. Every place they've tried it. You can look back years ago. You can look at modern times. You can look at today. Any place where communism is being implemented is a failure. Now, people can spin it different ways, of course. But if you look at the facts, it's been a failure. Continues to be a failure. And Mr. Fleury writes, what is causing these people to get so involved in it? He says, Herbert W. Armstrong addressed this very question. In 1968, he wrote, quote, and this is quoting Mr. Armstrong now, I have before me an important book called Witness by Whitaker Chambers. He was, as you may remember, a noted communist who turned against communism. So again, just to really get that in our heads, he was a communist, and so he was fully involved, fully engaged, and then he said, okay, I'm going to go the opposite direction here. He didn't like it. So he wasn't a critic of it initially. He was a communist. He became a critic of it, so he was inside of it. It says he exposed alleged activities of Alger Hiss, prominent in the State Department. They had a world-famous trial. Whitaker Chambers wrote a book about it. And he said, what is important is that he explains, as probably no one else ever did, why educated people, hundreds of college professors among them, become communists. This is important to you. Communism, in fact, is evil. So people wouldn't agree with that in some cases, but it's the truth. It's evil. He says, but do men join in it because they desire to be and do evil? See, that's an important question, and the answer is no. Of course not. People don't join into something like communism or some of these ideas because they want to be evil people. They think it's a good idea. It doesn't change the fact that it's not a good idea, but they do think it's a good idea. It says they join it because they see that this is a sick world, because they lose faith in existing governments, existing society, existing systems of economics and business. And that's important to understand when we look at the political divide in the United States today, because there are people on, you know, say the liberal side that are very much against capitalism. They're against the current governmental system or some facet of it. And, you know, they do have certain points in the fact that things aren't working. Yeah, they're not working. I mean, clearly, there are problems. There are things that are not working. But then they try to come up with their own solution. And oftentimes that solution is worse than the whatever's in place now. Because obviously they're not getting back to God's solution on it. But they don't like some of the, you know, existing systems of economics and business. The quote continues and says, educated men see these conditions. They see we live in a sick world. So Chambers explains, philosophers have explained the world. It is necessary to change the world. Communism is a new faith. At that time, of course, it's been around a while, but still, people that get involved in it, it's new to them. Many people have lost faith in this Western world's sick society, so they feel they must have a faith to live by. They have a conviction. We must change the world. And that's the excitement, right? Even among, say, some of the millennials. We've got to change things. We need a change. And so there's that excitement about change. But without the historical understanding of, well, what are you going to change to, though? It's been tried before. And I'm sure they'd come back and say, well, they didn't do it right. We'll do it better. Now, that everybody says that. But the results are the same. And it says they want to change the world, but through communism, it's going to become far worse, as they ought to know. Mr. Armstrong said, these people are blinded to any faith in God. They are cut off from God. God just doesn't exist in their thinking. They see no faith in democracy. They see no national purpose in the United States. They want to have a part in changing the world. And how true today. Now, this was written, I think it was 1968. How much more so today, those that want to vote socialism or vote communism, they don't see benefit in the United States in the current system. You know, they blame the president for being far worse than Hitler or Stalin. They just don't see any purpose to the current configuration of the United States. They want to change things. But what they want to change it to is far, far worse than what we have today. And there is a lot of good that the United States has brought to the world, but they don't see that. And, of course, there's been problems, too. But there has been a lot of good that has been done. Certainly better than communist nations ruling the world. You know, it's a night and day difference there. You can even see that in World War II, right? Why did the Germans fight so vehemently and so hard to hold out a little longer when they knew they were going to lose around Berlin and that area? Why did they hold out? Why did they fight so hard? Because they wanted America to capture them and not Russia. Because they knew what Russia would do to them. They knew what that system would do to them. And they knew America wouldn't be that way. That's something. That says something now. That's history. And it does show the difference in the thinking. This quote continues and says, actually, communism is like plunging from the frying pan into the fire. It is going from bad to worse. So they do see problems today, those that want change and want socialism and communism. But again, as it says, well, that's like plunging from the frying pan into the fire. No, you get change, all right, but it won't be the change that they hope for. The quote continues and says, but they see only that the present state of things is bad. Communism claims to be able to change the world. They assume the change will be good. It is a straw which they grasp. And finally, it says, this world really does need to be changed. It does. And if you listen to this radio station and you read the Trumpet magazine, you know that we do talk about that, about change, but change God's way, not the ideas of men, which just don't work. It says, this world really does need to be changed. It is sick in every direction you look. but it is deeply delusional to believe that its problems can be solved by communism. It just can't be solved with communism. And that's the issue. And so it takes a lot of historical understanding there to see the problems that communism has caused. It takes, a lot of understanding about God's word to see that that's the only solution. But for those that are wanting to vote, and they're younger people, but they're wanting communism or socialism, one of the main things for them, just in a secular sense, is that they just have that historical amnesia. They're being taught that communism might be a good idea, and they're not looking at the history of what it's actually done and how bad it's made things. You know, I had an experience recently in Seattle. It was 2 weeks ago. I was in Seattle for an evening and stayed downtown. It was a pretty nice area. But again, as you've heard on this program before, and maybe you've seen in the news, there's a lot of homeless in Seattle. Right? There's a lot of problems there. How do you solve those problems? I was there with my family and my children. And not that I was glad that there were homeless, but I, in a sense, I was glad that my kids got to see a little bit of it at a distance, and because it's the world in which we live. And I did tell them, and I said, look, you know, these are real problems. How do you solve these problems? I said, well, what if you were over Seattle today? All of a sudden you were in charge of Seattle. How do you solve these problems? What do you do? How do you clean this up? How do you fix the problems that we see? Those are very good questions. And that's what people are trying to grapple with. Well, how do you solve problems? And some people see that what's been implemented so far doesn't work very well, and so they want to change things. And in some cases, younger people, in their exuberance, they say, well, maybe we need socialism. Maybe we need communism. Well, they need to take a minute and step back and look at history. And look at history and understand that those ideas don't work. They just don't work. But again, with historical amnesia, there's nothing to go on other than what a person's been told. And so there is that growing idea out there that maybe that would be a better solution, but it is not. It certainly is not. So really a great write-up to get into and read a little bit about. Again, that's from the Trumpet magazine. You can go back and find that. It's at thetrumpet.com. Just an outstanding little write-up. It's by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury. Why Educators Are Attracted to Communism. And that's from the January 2016 print edition. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. It's great to go back and look at that because it just does such a great job of pointing out the fact of why, again, educators are so so focused and so attracted to the idea of communism, and the young people, many of them, are following suit. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, take a look at the fact that sometimes in life we do need to do hard things, and they're hard because they're not easy, but there is benefit to doing that, and we'll take a look at some of that. Right after this, you're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td at kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm and have a live link at thetrumpet.com. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dwight Falk, filling in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. I try to not say your, I guess I shouldn't say regular host because that makes me sound like I'm irregular, but your usual host, but then again, it makes me sound like I'm unusual. There's no good way to say that. The host that you normally have, Mr. Stephen Fleury, he'll be back very shortly, probably tomorrow or a few days after that. But I appreciate being able to fill in today here on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Did want to remind you that when you're checking your headlines today, make sure you do stop and check thetrumpet.com for the top stories there as well. Top story right now, will South Korea soon develop nuclear weapons? There's always the threat of that, especially in that region. That's by Jeremiah Jacques. And that's one of the top stories today. Also, Germany's next chancellor could emerge in an unprecedented way. You can read that. That's by Josue Michels. And quite a few other write-ups as well. Also, the new Key of David, the most recent one was on Hebrews. And, of course, there's some new shows after that as well, some repeats that are being played and then some new programming there. So check all that out. That's at thetrumpet.com. Well, recently I was visiting with some friends of mine, and one of them is going through a really difficult health trial and handling it very well. But it's hard. I mean, there's no doubt that it's a trial. That's what makes trials is that they're hard and they're difficult. And even though they're handling it in an outstanding way with a lot of faith, it still isn't easy. And sometimes we do have hard things that do come up in life, and we do have to deal with them. So I wanted to cover a little bit of this topic today. This is a lot of the material is taken from a book that we have at thetrumpet.com, and the title of it is Biblical Manhood. But this applies to, of course, everybody, men and women. But it's talking about having to do some hard things. That's one of the situations that comes up in life is something hard that we don't prefer to do, but sometimes we have to. And the book says that God intends your life to be difficult. Now, that's not something we probably want to hear, but there is some difficulty that comes up. Most people want the easy path. I think we probably all do, the path of least resistance. And some people are a little maybe more open for some challenges than others, but typically we want the easiest path, the one that where everything goes well and there's no difficulties. But this is a life of overcoming, and we do have to embrace the struggle of overcoming. It's a challenge. And again, Mr. Armstrong always made gave the example of lifting weights, right? He said, well, you know, if a person wants to get stronger, they could just sort of move their arms around, and that might make them a little bit stronger. But if they really wanted to gain strength, they have to push against something. There has to be some sort of resistance. They have to push a heavy weight. Or do a push-up or something. There has to be resistance. It has to be something that's hard. And that makes a person stronger. And so that is what happens in this life. We do come across things that are difficult and they're not easy, but they help us to grow and to develop. And, of course, for God's people, those that God has called and that have His Holy Spirit, that's what we need to rely on is the power of His Spirit to overcome. You know, humanly, we just can't do it on our own. We fall short. And overcoming is how we develop God's holy and righteous character. We're not perfect today. We have to keep growing towards that, so it means there's some things to overcome. And the thing to consider is that a life that is soft, it weakens character. We see that in society around us. We've been very blessed in this country over the years, and because of Abraham's obedience. And you can read about that in the United States and Britain in Prophecy if you haven't heard too much about that. But we've been very blessed in this country, which is wonderful. But there's a certain softness that creeps in where, you know, sometimes we just don't want to do the hard things because things are so easy in a lot of ways. And you can think of, you know, there are people over the years, maybe you've known a few where They retire, and they just don't do anything. In a lot of cases, they don't live very long, do they? Because they just sort of lose purpose. They don't have anything to do. We do need challenges. We do need to face some things and overcome some things. This biblical manhood book says, but in order to live lives of growing and overcoming, we must embrace challenges, difficulties, and trials. So again, it's not just tolerating them. It's embracing them, getting after it, doing all that we can to conquer. It says God needs strong men, and we can include anyone. God needs strong people to build his church, people who are dedicated servants of God. There has a certain strength that we have to have. If we're going to be effective in helping God's work, if we're going to be effective in leading our families or fulfilling whatever role we have within a group, we have to be strong people to do that. We have to be very strong. And again, we don't grow in that strength and in that character unless we do face some adversities. The biblical manhood book says, shatter the myth that easy is good and hard is bad. Shatter the myth that easy is good and hard is bad. And again, that's the natural tendency, is to take the path of least resistance and think that that's better. That's why, again, people struggle with exercising, because it's hard sometimes. It's hard to do it. It takes effort. It takes energy. Every single day you could look at stories in different periodicals or on the internet about, the challenges people face in trying to lose weight or something like that. And the struggle that they have, they tried for a while and then, they did okay and they failed. And it's just kind of this yo-yo. And I think we probably all have some experience with that, because oftentimes we just, we quit. We don't keep with our program. We don't keep with the exercise routine or whatever we're trying to accomplish there, because it's hard and we just don't feel like it. And that's something that we have to conquer, that idea that, well, the easy way is better and the hard way is not. And that's not the case. Notice this. This is a Bible passage here in 2 Timothy 1. 2 Timothy 1, verses 6 through 8. It says, wherefore I put you in remembrance that you stir up the gift of God. Of course, we need to use God's Spirit. It says, which is in you by the putting on of my hands. And verse 7 says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Be not you therefore ashamed of the testimony of our Lord, nor of me his prisoner, but be you partaker of the afflictions of the gospel according to the power of God. And so here's Paul writing to Timothy, and Paul's going through some difficulties. And he says, look, be you partaker of the afflictions of the gospel. There's going to be some afflictions in this life and in doing God's work. And we can consider Christ, right? The perfect example, our perfect example. He didn't have an easy path, but he embraced all of the challenges and he conquered. But it was a struggle. Obviously, it was the greatest struggle anybody's ever faced. And so he embraced that. He didn't take the easy way out. He had to embrace some very difficult things. And he knew that to fulfill his purpose, he would actually have to die for it, in the example of Christ. And so he embraced that. But again, we have power to do that. As it says in verse 7, God's given us a spirit. His spirit. It's not of fear, but it's of power and of love and a sound mind. And so we have to really embrace some of these difficult things. What type of actions does a person have when he is full of fear? Think about that. If a person is fearful, what actions do they take? Usually none, or the path of least resistance, as opposed to the person who is full of power, the love of God and a sound mind. It's very different. The actions are very different between those two, because fear just paralyzes. The fear of doing something, the fear of failure, the fear of, running into something difficult, it just paralyzes people. There's no positive actions there. Usually nothing happens, or a person runs. You can read through 2 Corinthians 11, verses 24 through 28, And that describes what Paul went through for God's work. You know, Paul had a very exalted position. He was an apostle. So did that mean easy street? Of course not. He was shipwrecked. He had pain. He had hunger. He had cold. He had imprisonment. He ultimately had death. But he powered through it all using God's Spirit. He didn't just sort of, you know, barely eke out an existence there. He really fought. You know, he really fought and he did God's work, but it was not an easy road for him. And so for anybody that God's working with, it's not always an easy road. Now, none of us are hoping for shipwrecked and all of those things, but we do have trials that come up. Sometimes they're health trials, sometimes they're financial trials, sometimes it's, you know, family trials. There can be all kinds of situations that come up, and it's not easy. But we don't want to look at that and think, wow, this is unusual. How come there's a difficulty here? I mean, consider Paul. Consider Christ. They didn't just face hard things. They embraced it. They embraced what they had to do. Revelation 21 and verse 8 gives a pretty serious warning there and says that the fearful will be cast into the lake of fire. You know, if people can't conquer fear, then ultimately there's not a lot they can do because it just won't do anything. Fear has to be conquered. You know, what if Paul was too afraid to do God's work? Well, God just simply couldn't have used him. He would have had to find somebody else, and he would have. So we can't be afraid to do whatever it is that we have to do. You know, as long as it's, of course, the proper thing to do, whatever God's will is. Luke 19, there Christ gives the parable of the pounds. And so you will recall that the servant who was fearful and did nothing with his pound was condemned, wasn't he? He was too afraid to step out and grow. He was too afraid to embrace the hard things. He didn't want to lift the weights, so to speak. And so he didn't grow. He didn't get any stronger. He just didn't grow because there was too much fear there, fear of difficulty. The Biblical Manhood book says we are called to a life of struggling, battling, overcoming, and conquering. So we want to complete that sentence, right? Conquering is the final word there. Yeah, there's struggle, there's battle, there's overcoming, but and conquering, overcoming and conquering. So we don't want to just sort of, you know, be like an athlete that just gets pummeled but somehow is still standing. I mean, we want to score the goal, whatever sport you want to use there. We want to be able to conquer, to overcome, not just sort of, you know, be battered around. Even in those difficulties, we want to be able to succeed. It says a life of doing what needs to be done for God. We need the problems, challenges, and afflictions life presents. Without them, we tend to become spiritually complacent. And, you know, we all like things to go well, of course. And I mean, I'm not suggesting we try to make things difficult. But at the same time, if things are always just easy, well, what happens? Well, we do tend to become fairly complacent. I think we can all probably think of experiences in our own lives and maybe other examples where that has been the case, where we, you know, we've seen that or experienced it, and we just became complacent. We got kind of bored. You have that happen with kids a lot, you know, if you've had children or do have children. They just get bored. You know, I'm bored. And so and then if you suggest, well, maybe you should go, you know, do something, go mow the lawn or something, then they're like, well, you know, I'll probably find something else to do. They don't necessarily want to do that, but they get bored because, again, if they just have things going pretty smoothly, then it's easy to get complacent. And that's true of all of us. Complacent means showing smug. This is a really interesting definition. Complacent means showing smug or uncritical satisfaction with oneself or one's achievements. And when I looked that definition up, that did surprise me a bit. I roughly knew what complacent meant, but just the fact that it says showing smug or uncritical satisfaction with oneself or one's achievements, I thought, wow, I didn't really realize it had that connotation, where there is sort of that attitude of, oh, yeah, good enough, you know, good enough. I did good enough. I don't need to put in any more work or put in any more effort. I did fine. And there's a certain smugness to that, that, again, that's just not a good attitude. That's a complacency that we don't want to have. And so we have to break out of that pattern, and oftentimes we just don't have the will to do it ourselves, and God has to put us through something to kind of shake us up a little bit,
Or maybe, you know, we just don't even see it in ourselves. And God has to give us a little trial or test to, or allow it to shake us up, to get us to grow, you know, to get us to develop. I mean, even think about that. I was going to start talking about gardening, but I don't know much about gardening. But, you know, the little I do know is that, of course, sometimes you've got to get in there and, you know, pull the weeds and mix the soil up a little bit and kind of mix it up to get things growing as it should. And so I think that's right in my gardening expertise. But it's, you know, you've got to mix it up a little bit. You've got to do something. You've got to, you know, you can't just let it keep growing and keep developing as it is, or else it just won't go the right direction. So there has to be some change there. If we embrace that measuring, if we embrace those trials, embrace them, and really fight through them, then we begin to grow. We develop. The biblical manhood book says, Satan wants to seduce us and lure us to sleep by getting us addicted to comforts and pleasures. This is a real danger. Getting addicted to comforts and pleasures. Now, again, that's not to say we shouldn't enjoy life. God wants that. But there's a difference between enjoying the good things in life and becoming addicted to comforts and pleasures, to where we just don't want to do anything. We don't want to put in any effort. We don't want to face hard things. And that's an attitude that can be very destructive and very dangerous. And again, it's a seductive sort of direction. And it can just sneak up on us in a lot of ways, especially in a society where we do have kind of everything at the tip of our fingertips if we want it. We can get into an attitude of being addicted to comforts and pleasures. I mean, that's happening all the time right now, even with, say, technology, where you have young children that have had smart devices since they were, you know, I guess old enough to hold one. And you take it away from them, and they lose it. And you read news stories about that all the time, where it's a video game or it's some sort of a pleasure that they're addicted to, and if you take it away from them, they can't cope. They can't cope with it. And for those that have grown up without that, that seems, you know, ridiculous, but that's the situation in some of those cases. It just highlights the fact that when a society becomes so addicted to those comforts and those pleasures, that they really are not very effective. It's very hard to grow. It's hard to face real things, real hard things. Deuteronomy 8, verses 2 and 3, it says this. It says, "And you shall remember all the way which the Eternal your God led you these 40 years in the wilderness," talking to ancient Israel here, "to humble you and to prove you and to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or no. And he humbled you and suffered you to hunger and fed you with manna, which you knew not, neither did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Eternal does man live." And so the point here is that challenges reveal our hearts. They reveal what's in our hearts when we face a challenge. And so we can think about our own lives. And, I mean, have you ever had a trial that showed you something about yourself that you would not have seen otherwise? I think we could all say, yeah, absolutely. Where we wouldn't have seen something about ourselves without that particular trial. So I've had a few of those, and I look back on them, and I think, well, I would never want to have to go through that again, hopefully. But the lesson learned was valuable. And I'm glad that I have the lesson from it. Even though, of course, you know, no one's going to sign up for a difficult trial. We don't necessarily want those to come our way, but when they do, we do have to embrace them and realize there's value here. I'm gonna grow because of this if I embrace this challenge, this difficulty, and not think it strange, like, well, how could this happen? Well, things happen sometimes, and we do have to work through them. The biblical manhood book says Satan wants to entrap us in materialism and comforts. And if we succumb, we tend to become afraid of discomfort. It's a great point. If we get too comfortable with everything, we become afraid of discomfort. Afraid of it. Again, fear. And Satan wants us, it says, to fear discomfort. So we are willing to do anything to avoid it. And that's true. I mean, people often will, and again, nobody wants discomfort, but people will often do anything to avoid discomfort. Just about anything. And because they're so afraid of it. Notice this passage in 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 and 4, 1 through 4. It says, "This know also, that in the last days," these days that we're in today, "perilous times shall come." And then it goes on to describe what we'd see in society around us. Verse 2 says, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent," which means not having control, "fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of God." That's the exact point that's being made. That's the spirit of the age, where people are lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. They want the pleasures of life and are addicted to them and can't face hard things. Our main goal in life can't be to be comfortable. It just can't. That can't be the main goal, to be comfortable. The book says we have eliminated so many of the challenges life used to bring. Just life in general, just surviving used to bring challenges. I often think about that when I'm in my house and I turn on water and it just comes out of the faucet. People used to have to go to a well, right, or somewhere to get water. That was a thing that took time. What if they wanted hot water? Well, I just turned the dial to hot and hot water comes out. Well, people would have to boil it, right? There was a lot that had to be done just for basic things, but we don't face that today in most cases. We have eliminated, it says, so many of the challenges life used to bring. Unsurprisingly, we also have epidemic obesity, poor health, people with no purpose in life, who are glutted on entertainment, people unwilling to work. People that are just unwilling to work. You know, again, hearkening back to what I mentioned earlier about being in downtown Seattle, quite a few people that just aren't going to do anything down there, and plenty that will work. Of course, I don't want to paint it completely that way, but those that are unwilling to work, and they may have some issues, of course, that prevent it. But for the most part, you know, if they needed a job or they wanted a job, it's there. They could do it. But some are just unwilling. And again, I know there's a lot that go into those situations, but again, we're talking about general trends here, and there is a lot of that type of thinking out there. Glutted on entertainment, just unwilling to work. The book says, what is going to happen to all the soft, self-indulgent people in our modern society when great tribulation strikes? You can read about that in Matthew 24. That's, of course, a prophecy that Christ gave. There is going to be great tribulation and great suffering. No one wants to face that, but in particular, what about a very soft, soft people? In Acts 14, it's just a fascinating example. You can read about Paul being stoned in Lystra and then going back again and teaching in the same city. Can you imagine that? Again, he was doing this for God's work. I mean, he was doing it because God told him to, but he got stoned. He should have been dead. It was a miracle that he wasn't. And what does he do? Well, does he run away? So I'm not going back in that town. He went back the next day and began teaching again, or he went back and began teaching again. Verse 22 there in Acts 14, it says, confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith, and that we must through much tribulation enter into the kingdom of God. To enter God's kingdom, to be given that great opportunity and that great reward, there has to be some effort. There has to be some battling and conquering of challenges. Matthew 11 and verse 12 says, and from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. And the margin says the kingdom is gotten by force, and it is gotten by men and women of driving force. The expository dictionary reads, those who are possessed of eagerness and zeal, instead of giving up to the opposition, press their way into the kingdom, an eagerness and a zeal to face the trials and the challenges, to face them. And again, nobody's out there signing up for a difficulty, right? I mean, none of us want that. But when they do come, and they do come in life, sometimes smaller, sometimes a little bigger, we have to have an eagerness and a zeal to fight our way through it. Using God's power, of course. No human being is going to do this on their own, but using the Spirit of God to do that. And so we do need to grow and develop, and so sometimes we do face some of these challenges. this this book, Biblical Manhood. And again, it's free at thetrumpet.com. It's a great read for men and women alike. It says, it is never too late in life to embrace challenges. It's never too late. Make a commitment to staying active physically and mentally, and of course, spiritually. Take up a new hobby, learn a foreign language, read a difficult book. You know, all, it just gives a lot of examples of things you can do, practical examples, where we can keep challenging ourselves as well and not just sitting around waiting to be challenged. We can even challenge ourselves in some of these things. It says, don't focus on the past, look forward to the future. Everything that helps us grow is uncomfortable. It's a little uncomfortable, whether it's exercise, whether it's maybe changing the diet, whether it's taking up reading. That can be uncomfortable for a while if you're not used to doing it, but then you really begin to enjoy it. Or, you know, those trials that come along in life that maybe are out of our control, that we do have to deal with and we do have to just fight through. You know, there are those as well. And again, we have to embrace that and say, well, you know what? This is not easy, but I'm going to embrace this and I'm going to conquer through it and I'm going to learn through it. What makes you uncomfortable, the book says, tackle that, get after that. Some great advice there from the Biblical Manhood book. It's free. I'd recommend you read it if you haven't, and it's a great reference to go back to again and again. That's at thetrumpet.com. That's all the time that we have for today on this edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks for spending some time with me. I'm Dwight Falk. Your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury, will be back shortly. Thanks for joining me today here on Trumpet Radio.